From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in the hour ahead, we'll reflect on the life and work of beloved longtime California historian Kevin Starr, who passed away on Saturday. The USC professor and former state librarian is best known for his 8-volume series on the history of the state. Then at 10:30, we discuss President Obama's controversial decision to shorten the sentence of Chelsea Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst who was convicted of releasing secret documents to WikiLeaks. Should he also have pardoned former national security contractor Edward Snowden? The politics of pardons, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome to the Forum program. On Saturday, California lost its longtime historian and former state librarian Kevin Starr, the USC professor who penned an 8-volume series on California that the Los Angeles Times called indispensable, died of a heart attack at the age of 76. Starr, who was known for his trademark bow tie and straw boater hat, won a Guggenheim Fellowship and was awarded a National Humanities Medal. He was also appointed as California State Librarian by Arnold Schwarzenegger and served from 1994 to 2004. In this segment, we remember Starr and his influence on the Golden State. And during a 2009 Forum interview with guest host Scott Schaefer, Kevin Starr talked about whether California had lost its golden Hollywood magic from earlier decades.
No, California's not lost its mojo, but California's a struggle now. California's not an unearned increment. I'm writing a volume, I'm going back to the chronology now, and I'm writing a volume on California in the 1950s. And you have an article, I think it was in Look magazine, I saw it recently, how well you could live on unemployment in California. It shows a bunch of guys down with sunglasses lying on the beach at Santa Monica on unemployment. Well, that's the image of California as an escape into a new solution, as California is the unearned increment. Today we see California much more as a culture that offers us marvelous opportunities for leisure and personal expression, but also is demanding struggle, commitment, and in part because the world is more complex, but also in part because millions of new Californians, immigrant Californians, come here with the expectation that California is not a place to drop out, but that California is a place to drop in and find it.
Well, we're going to remember Kevin Starr in this segment of Forum. Dan Brecky's here to help us with that in studio, blogger and online editor for KQED. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Michael.
We're also going to welcome William Devereaux, who's director of the Huntington USC Institute on California in the West and a professor of history at USC, where Kevin Starr also professed and worked. And welcome, William Devereaux.
Thanks very much.
And Dan Brecky, I'm going to begin with you because what we just heard of Kevin Starr kind of in some ways for me is a measure of the man. I mean, the kind of energy that he had and enthusiasm and also speaking, he would like this ex cathedra, you know, which means from the seat of authority. It's usually used about the Pope, and he had very deep Catholic ties about California. He was the voice of California for so many.
He was. And a proud Californian, proud San Franciscan. He was proud to call himself a fourth-generation San Franciscan, San Francisco being one of the few places in the world, I think, where that establishes your local cred, how many generations you go back. One of his grandfathers was a firefighter in the 1906 fire that followed the earthquake. He's very proud of that and talked about that. I think a lot of us have the sense that San Francisco was a more working class city in that early part of the 20th century. He was born in 1940 and, you know, a more industrial city, a port city. His upbringing, though, was not a classic, you know, California story from the sense that he came from what we would call today a broken home. I mean, his father was disabled. His mother had a nervous breakdown, and he and his older brother were—
They were at an orphanage, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah, they were sent up to a Catholic orphanage in Ukiah. Far from being a Dickensian experience, he described that as five of the best years of his life. He thought Catholic education had saved him, both then, later, when he went to St. Boniface School in San Francisco— At St. Ignatius High School at the University of San Francisco, all Catholic institutions. As far as his scholarship, I'll leave that to people who are actually scholars. But he really wrestled with the meaning of California in a way, the meaning of California to the nation and the world in a way that nobody else had or has done. And there are probably only two historians of this magnitude in California history. One is Hubert Howe Bancroft, who had a completely different methodology and approach to this, and Kevin Starr is the other. And I think Kevin Starr has put his imprint on modern California and how people think of it in a way nobody else has. And the last thing I would say about him is that he was a great optimist. He saw, and you could hear what in this clip that we just heard, that he saw that California faced dire challenges, and they have not gotten easier in the 7 or 8 years since he said that. But he believed. He believed in California. He believed in the California dream, and he believed in the power of democracy and scholarship and the American experiment, you know, the embrace of the public sphere to rescue us from all our problems.
And he gave a lot to the public sphere. Somebody in the last hour called me a Renaissance man. Kevin was truly a Renaissance man. I mean, he was a man who believed in – a man I'm honored to have, call him a friend because he was a friend. And he was someone who – I think we remember as larger than life in many ways. I mean, you know, he wrote a column for The Examiner. It was a religious column. He also ran for public office. He wrote 8 volumes that stand up as some of the great volumes about California and probably the best the history that's ever done of this state, and was a man of enormous energies and appetites. You know, in fact, Dan Zoll and I, when we realized he had passed away, said, we're going to miss him. He was our go-to guy when anything came up about California. Let me go to William Devereaux, in fact, and get some remembrances from you. I mean, you worked a lot with him and saw him in more of an academic role than we saw him in his public intellectual role. How do you remember him most?
Well, I couldn't agree more about the optimism and the larger-than-life persona. Academically and as a mentor and a colleague, he always had a good word. Oftentimes that word came out in Latin. He always was boisterously intellectual. He loved ideas. He was steeped in deep reading, obviously. He was truly a man of letters. Even in that kind of old-fashioned sensibility, he read beyond disciplines. And then he wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. You know, he wrote a novel. He did all these histories. He had his first volume of the North American Catholic Experience out. He contained multitudes, and his personality was irrepressible. He really made a remarkable impact, not only throughout the entire state. I think Kevin would be known everywhere in the state of California if he were to get off a plane or appear at a public library. But that also is true beyond the confines of the state. He was a national figure.
But a lot of great writers are not great speakers, and he was a great orator. I mean, he could spot on deliver a speech without notes and without preparation, or what appeared to be very little, if any, preparation, because he had that kind of mind. And the reality is also, in addition to that intellect, he was a man of great warmth and heart, wouldn't you say, William?
Absolutely, and playful. Intellectually playful, he played with words. That's one of the reasons he was such a great speaker, because it had a kind of erudite casualness to it. Kevin could just stand up in front of anybody. He loved people. You know, he's truly a small D Democrat. He just enjoyed being around people, and he enjoyed the repartee of ideas. There was a kind of showman and vaudevillian in Kevin. There was a raconteur in Kevin, and there was absolutely this deep, deep scholarly purpose and scholarly meaning that he drew from his work.
I'm going to actually invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. We'd love to hear some remembrances you may have or some thoughts you might have of Kevin Starr. He did make a mark, and that mark continues to last and endure, and we would certainly like to hear what kind of mark he may have had in your life, or what perhaps you want to capture about him in your own remembrances or memories of him. Our toll-free number is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us in conversation about Kevin Starr, and we welcome your calls, 866-733-6786. A number of other ways you can join us. You can email us, forum at kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, and reading about Kevin Starr's life and going back and remembering so much about him. I discovered, for example, one of these interesting little facts, Dan Brecky, that at USF he succeeded Warren Hinkle as the editor of the Foghorn, the USF newspaper.
Well, you know, they couldn't be any more different in terms of their visual and personal presentation. Although, as has been noted, Kevin Starr was a man of large and lusty appetites, as was Warren. But, you know, they're two San Francisco originals, and they came up in parallel, in a sense. He also came up in parallel with Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown was born 2 years before Kevin Starr. Kevin took delight in noting that both of their grandfathers had helped fight the 1906 fire. Brown's father was a lieutenant. Brown's grandfather was a lieutenant in the police department, his mother's father. You know, we mentioned that he worked for the Examiner. He wrote for the Examiner. I don't imagine Kevin Starr wasted any time on Facebook the way most of us do, but there is a San Francisco alumni group on Facebook where there have been some reminiscences of Kevin Starr being traded. He wrote all of his columns on a yellow legal pad. He never learned how to type while he was there. Apparently didn't have a driver's license, though a couple people there apparently tried to teach him. And one of the more telling there are a couple of other things. He was said to always arrive with six books under his arms and go through a long process of sorting out which was the right legal pad for today's column. But one thing in terms of his courtliness, his love of other people, there was an 88-year-old woman who was a receptionist there, and he would greet her every day by kissing her hand.
Now, he was wonderfully old school in that way. He had a kind of formality that was great, really, yeah, to behold. And I'm just wondering also about something that his wife, Sheila, said. William Dever, let me go to you on this. One of the things Kevin said was in 2009, he was asked about in an interview I did with him, what's the best era? And he said, right now. That was the optimism again, you know, saying something along those lines. But his wife said that he was a 50s man, you know. In other words, he was talking about how he didn't quite meld with or understand the 60s and all the turmoil and protest and all the rest of that. But a 50s man also says something about, again, the measure of the man and just, again, old-fashioned, old school.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Kevin would have come of age as a young man in the latter 50s, and there was a bit of a golden glow in Kevin's eye about the 50s and a kind of consensus view of the American past, a period in California history of great public works and public works expansion. So there's no doubt that Kevin was enamored of the 50s and his own the way in which he always enveloped his own biography in the state. And he did steer away from the 60s. He didn't know how to grapple with the 60s. He hadn't made his peace with the 60s and the turmoil of the 60s. And so I think that's entirely true. I also think I can certainly think of Kevin in the 1890s. I mean, he didn't date back that far, but Kevin strikes me as a man about San Francisco in the 1890s who would have hung out with Frank Norris and the like.
Well, he was an American literature scholar as well, and we've got some callers here. Let me go to Bill. Bill, you're on.
Oh, hello, Michael. It's Bill Issel in Berkeley. Like many of us, I'm very sad about Kevin's passing, and I just wanted to mention something that hasn't come up yet, and that is that ever since the 70s, when I first met him in person, and we would be working at the Bancroft and sort of competing for the same chair at the best table, Kevin has always gone out of his way to help and mentor younger scholars. I just thought I'd mention that. It's an aspect of his warmth, his geniality, his openness to people that Bill Devereaux just mentioned. He was a wonderful guy. He was one of a kind and also a brilliant synthesizer. Of a number of fields. This has sort of been mentioned, but his ability to dip into a variety of humanities and social science literature and then put it all together and show the relation between the history and our present circumstances sort of sets Kevin off and will be an important part of his legacy.
Well, you said it well, and I thank you for that. There was a kind of interdisciplinary mind that he had, and a capacious mind, certainly, and I'll use a little Latin myself here. He was sui generis. You know, he was, in many ways, unto himself, and as I said earlier, larger than life, and we were remembering him fondly here, which moves me because he was a man who inspired that kind of warmth and feeling and tenderness. Let me get another caller on, and that's you, Peter. You're on.
Yes, hi. It's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association. He was a big man in many ways, as you know, and it's a very sad thing to lose him. He also was city librarian, which you didn't mention, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
For about 3 years in the 70s. And I think, in particular, he did something quite decent and even brave, and that is in Nick Basbanes' book, Patience and Fortitude, he was very sharply critical of the design of the new main library and also talked about what he called the disestablishment of what had been a distinguished collection. And I could read you the last paragraph of
that. Well, Peter, didn't he go along? Remember that whole flap with Nicholson Baker when they were burning books because they had all things moving toward computerized digital stuff? I think he stood on that ground with Baker, didn't he?
He not only said, he augmented what Nick Baker had said. They didn't burn the books. They took them to the dump. But Nick Baker had written in the New Yorker that 200,000 books, as a conservative estimate, were gotten rid of, and he said it was actually 500,000. And he defends that in this book, in the chapter about the San Francisco Public Library. The last word in the chapter is what happened at San Francisco, according to Kevin Starr.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be so cavalier as talk about the burning of the books. It brings up fascism and Ray Bradbury and all that. But, you know, they were disposed of, as you said. And let me thank you. And let me bring Greg Lucas into this discussion. He is state librarian now of California. And talking about Kevin Starr, Greg Lucas, first of all, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Well, thanks, Michael. Glad to be here.
How did he pave the way for you? I mean, talk about his influence as a mentor in terms of your librarian work now.
Oh, in a lot of different ways. I think one of the things I appreciate the most is he made a commitment to making sure that the voices of all Californians, right, got to be heard. So he made a high priority when he was here on making sure that Californian stories got told. And I think that's an important thing. It's still a priority for us, particularly in a state where the University of California says there's 300 languages and dialects spoken every day.
It was also, I think, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about Kevin in conjunction, this may sound like a stretch, but with Borges, the Argentinian writer, mainly because he was also a librarian, but also his world was books. His world was the life of the mind. And to a great extent, he epitomized that in so many ways. He was a public intellectual, but also he was a librarian. And, you know, when you think of librarians, you think of people who are maybe a little more industrious and fastidious and, you know, looking at the Dewey Decimal System, going back to that sort of thing, or now Library of Congress. In other words, it's a job that carries a whole different responsibility to it than, say, the world of books.
Well, you know, let me just jump in and say one thing. I mean, Kevin Starr was very proud of his term as state librarian and as a San Francisco librarian, as our earlier caller pointed out. And it was more than, he was a champion of libraries everywhere in the state. He loved local libraries and felt like they were key to the life of communities. And he also was an important government official, you know, in the bureaucratic sense, in overseeing a huge budget to promote the preservation and creation of new library facilities. So this is a key part of his career as well.
And Greg, let me go back to you about the story. I love the story about Kevin being late for a meeting.
It's kind of a throwaway, but somebody was relating this to me, and so they had a meeting over one of these, some kind of issue in the legislature, and the meeting began, and Dr. Starr was a couple minutes late, and he came down, and he you know, sat down heavily in this chair and said, "Well, the ego has landed."
And William Devereaux, didn't you talk about him as the master of the stage whisper? You want to
Oh, yeah.
Clarify that a bit for us.
Yes. Yeah, Kevin, he had that booming voice, of course, and it was not only, I think, impossible for him to disguise that, I don't think he wanted to. And so we would be at one or another meeting of some stiff academic formality, and Kevin would boom that voice from behind a book or behind a piece of paper that he would try to disguise his face or his voice, but it was always unmistakably Kevin, and it was always loud, and it was always spot on or very funny or ever so slightly inappropriate for the moment. So he was a master of that sort of thing.
He could be funny and quite jolly. I'm glad we're emphasizing his sense of humor. Here's Kat.
Absolutely.
Debbie, who tweets, Kevin Starr was an awesome teacher, writer, scholar, and librarian. I'm grateful to have taken his Stanford continuing education class. Another listener writes, he sounds very impressive. Which of his books are highly recommended? What's a good one to start with? Any thoughts about that, Bill Bonio?
I would start with the first one, Americans in the California Dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the book that launched the ship, and that's Kevin taking his New England steeped graduate education in American civ for a walk across the country and arriving in California and deciding to take California civilization very seriously as an intellectual project and a project of words. It's really impressive.
You talk about New England. It was Harvard, of course.
Yes, it was.
Spurs. And let me get another caller on here. Tom is joining us from Petaluma. Tom, you're on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to add, you mentioned both the fact that he had a great sense of humor and that he was a city librarian. In his novel, Land's End, the opening chapter is essentially a comic depiction of the life of the San Francisco, a day in the life of the San Francisco city librarian. He had been appointed, I think, by Mayor Alioto. And the whole chapter, in fact, the whole book is kind of a Romana Clay. But it's just hilarious. If you've ever worked for the city of San Francisco, his depiction of the bureaucracy and the ins and outs of trying to work in what was then the old library is really quite funny. So I highly recommend that to anybody who wants a laugh.
Okay. Thank you for that. I wonder if that book is still in print, Land's End. Anybody have any idea? Dan, do you?
I don't know. It's been recommended to me. I'm going to look it up.
1979, I believe. And Kevin started out, why don't you be a novelist? We had discussions about this. We were both novelist monkeys, failed novelists in our own minds and so forth. But one thing about Kevin that can be said is he was anything but a failure in life, sterling and successful in so many ways, but also a good friend and a loving and wonderfully kind man. And we will miss him. Thank you, Dan Brecke.
You're welcome.
And thank you, William Devereaux.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Greg Lucas.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Good to have all of you with us again. Dan Brecke is blogger and online editor for KQED, William Devereaux, director of the Huntington USC Institute on California, and Greg Lucas, state librarian of California. We've got another segment coming up, and in the segment that's up ahead, we're going to talk about the decision to commute the sentence of Chelsea Manning, and we're also going to bring up the question of whether or not Edward Snowden's sentence or whether there should be actually a forgiveness for Edward Snowden as well. That's very much in the zeitgeist now. We'll find out your thoughts. We'll talk to some experts. We'll hear from both sides. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.